Hello and welcome to the Dream Swarm podcast. This is your home for supernatural film, stories and art. I'm your host, magic realist filmmaker Andy Mark Simpson. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Hello everyone, welcome to the next episode of Dream Swarm. I'm really pleased today to be joined by Fraser and James, who are from the Gaelic fantasy series Origins of the Laois. So welcome, lads.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for having us.
So yeah, this is the start of a new series for Dream Swarm, which I'm really excited about. So it's good to have a really good meaty project to discuss, and I've been following it online and looking at all your teaser trailers and things. Maybe we should start just by introducing yourselves before we talk about the show. So James and Fraser, would you mind briefly introducing yourselves and what your backgrounds are?
So I'm Fraser. I've been writing and making films for about 10 years now. I've been producing like a couple of web series, some short films. We did a feature film way back in 2010, and I just love anything to do with superheroes and mythology and fantasy and all things supernatural. That's kind of my thing. So that's kind of what I've been trying to do. I've been trying to make projects which are set in the now, but obviously all with a bit of like a magical element or a superhero element or, you know, a mythological element. That's what I've been trying to do.
And what about yourself, James?
I am James T. Harding. I'm a author, screenwriter and script editor. I'm based up here in Edinburgh, but I was born in Wales and have Irish and English heritage. So I have a sort of a heady melange of British cultures going on here. I'm very motivated by fantasy and folklore, and a lot of my writing will incorporate those themes and also like later occult magic demonology thing as well.
Let's share similar interests there, and that's what Dream Swarm's all about, is looking at these supernatural and fantasy and magic realism and folklore elements and new projects that are coming up around those kind of areas, one of which is your project Origins of the Laois. Could you introduce us to the show and what it's all about and where the idea came from?
So basically the impetus behind it was, during lockdown I was re-editing the one and only feature film that I made. It was called Night is Day, and that was basically about a superhero vigilante in Glasgow. He had magic powers. I was just like, oh, I kind of miss doing a movie. I kind of miss doing one thing, getting it made, getting it out there. And James and I had worked so hard on our web series, Cops and Monsters, for like 4 years, I think it was. I think it must have been a solid 4 years of crowdfunding, writing and getting it out there and editing and shooting and all that fun stuff that goes with it. And we managed to make 9 episodes of that. So we finished series one. Then we brought in some of the best writers in the land to write series two. We wrote some really good stuff for series two, even if I do say so myself. James's episode being one that I really wanted to see happen. And we crowdfunded for Debbie. So we got Debbie Moon involved, and Debbie wrote and created Wolfblood for CBBC. She's wrote for Hinterland. She's done a lot, Debbie. I like to embarrass her by calling her award-winning Debbie Moon. But Debbie came and worked in the writer's room with us for series two of Cops and Monsters. And she wrote a cracking, emotionally heartbreaking episode of Cops and Monsters involving a zombie who didn't quite realize he was a zombie. And we crowdfunded it and we got the money for it. We shot over 3 days and we put it out there and it went really well. And then we went to crowdfund episode two and the money didn't come in. So we tried again for a lesser amount of money and the money didn't come in. And we tried one more time and the money didn't come in. So at that point, my heart was well and truly broken because I really wanted to continue Cops and Monsters, but we'd been working on it for so long. So we went away and I was like, right, if we're not going to get Cops and Monsters finished, I'm just going to make a movie because I can crowdfund the movie and we can make it and get it out there. And I just want to do something creative. And then I ended up writing all this stuff, like all this history and the Bible. It wasn't a Bible at the time, but just all the backstory to the movie. And then I met our producer, Judd Telliard, at the Cannes Film Festival, and I was pitching it to him and he said, you're writing a TV show, you're not writing a movie. I said, no, I'm not writing a TV show, I'm writing a movie. I just want to do one movie. I'm not doing another. I'm not going through that again. I'm not going through the web series route again. I'm not doing it. And he goes, no, you're writing a TV show, you're not writing a movie. We'll get more out of a TV show than we'll ever get out of a movie. Let's make it a TV show. So he convinced me. And it just kind of grew into, it was just Origins for so long. Judd's like, we can't just call it Origins because there's so many things that are just called Origins. So I went and looked up the Gaelic, and obviously it's about the origins of Effie becoming a hero, becoming a champion of Scotland. So Laois kind of came up, and I just thought it sounded quite fancy. So that's how it came into existence.
What drew you to the sort of Highlandsy folklore-y subject matter? Because your previous work's been very superhero-based, Fraser.
Yeah, I think it was because everything we see, it's all either made, if in Scotland in particular, everything's sort of city-based. So everything's sort of London or Glasgow or Edinburgh. It's all very city and urban, where there's just... there's so few projects or shows or films that are in the Highlands that I just thought it would be nice just to get away from the city so we can show, it's a bit touristy, which is something we come up against constantly, but it was just to show like a nicer side of Scotland that wasn't all, you know, drugs and gangs and depression. But I just, it just fascinated me that we could do something that was a bit more, just a bit more wide and a bit more open away from city streets. And I think with that came the magic and the monsters. And when you look up Scottish mythology and you look at the creatures that there are, a lot of them are based up north, and a lot of them are quite water-based, or you've got the Kayak Vuur, who, you know, formed the hills and the mountains of Scotland with lightning and thunder, and it all kind of just lended itself to that.
You're looking deep into the into the mythology of Scotland, and in particularly the Highlands and the Gaelic areas of Scotland and that folklore and mythology there. How did that then come into the characters? How does that come into the show? Are there particular characters in there who represent that folklore or those figures?
It's sort of a stramash of things. We're not reenacting any legends from the Scottish folklore specifically, but what we did was a hell of a lot of research about those legends. And it's not just the Scots Gaelic ones. You've got Norse stuff coming from Orkney, Shetland and the Hebrides. You've got some Caledonian stuff, you've got Pictish stuff. There's all these different cultures from ancient Scotland that have fed into the unique set of legends we have here. And we went off on a field trip basically by Agave Broin, who was the Gaelic consultant for Outlander. Yeah, he took us off in the car and we went round on the west coast of folklore significance, and he showed us a bit more of the things that were there, the archaeological remains, the standing stones with the carvings in them.
We did a blessing as well, remember?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. He took us to a fairy well and did a blessing for our creative endeavours, which felt really special. It was very nice of him to share that with us.
Because didn't we walk clockwise 3 times, and then we drank from the well.
Yeah, you walk sunwise to activate things, and anti-clockwise to deactivate them.
Yeah.
Which is often the more sensible way to walk if you don't know what you're doing, in case anyone wants to try this at home. And we're reading all these books of Scottish folklore. There are plenty of ones. The one I connected with most was Anne Ross's Folklore of the Scottish Highlands, which came out in 2000. And it's a sort of anthology with lots of different folklores in it. And it's got stuff about the clan histories as well, which is obviously crucial to understanding Scottish folklore. And then all of this went into a melting pot, and then we ignored it completely to come up with the ideas for the show.
But that's what we do, though. That's what writers do. It was so good because Agave took all day with us, and he showed us all these different places, and he told us all these different things about gods and goddesses, and how there was like a god of the west and the north and the south and the east. And James and I were just looking at each other going, ooh. And that's all in a writer's bible somewhere. Like, we've written all that down. It's all there if we ever need it. But what's nice is that we can kind of cherry pick a little bit and make our own thing out of it. And that way we're not going to get into trouble off of anybody who goes, that's not accurate. Because that could happen. So I like, it's nice that we can kind of springboard from what we found. And
You can't be accurate anyway, because the folklore varies from island to island.
Exactly.
Everywhere's got its own versions of the stories.
Oh,
and for people from that place, that is the official one true version.
Exactly.
And all of those people can be pleased.
As you say, you're not just taking a book of Scottish folklore tales and making little short snippets to recreate those tales. It's just getting that atmosphere and those types of gods and goddesses and the folklore beliefs and putting them together. But you're creating characters, but it's set in the modern day, your show, isn't it? So it's, that kind of creeps into modern life as well.
Yeah, so it's set in present day, whatever year that might be by the time we get the show out. And it's about Effie, who comes back to Scotland after being away for about 14 years. Her and her family move out to America, and they are kind of forced to come back home when their grandmother gets sick, even though they were warned previously not to come back to Scotland because something bad will happen. So Effie comes back to her childhood home, but she's been away for so long, it's a brand new place for her. So it's all about her self-discovery, and it's about her figuring where she fits in now, being torn away from her friends, suddenly in backwater Scotland, as it were, not really know what's going on. And she finds herself caught up with all this magic and myth and legend and a picked goddess who's suddenly been resurrected for reasons I won't go into. And she has to work with Enya, our picked goddess, to put all these Scottish monsters that have escaped, which may or may not be Effie's fault, and she has to put, them back into the well before it's too late. So from there, we've got everyday stuff going on with life and what teens and adults go through. But obviously we've got the Monster of the Week vibe going on. So every week we'll have a different monster and we can kind of go into the history and the folklore behind that. And to me, that's just really exciting to kind of delve into that a bit more.
Yeah, I really like things that are modern day and include things kind of coming in deep from the past there. There's some of the Gaelic language in the trailers that I've seen. And James, you were talking about that Scotland has a melting pot of different cultures. And I don't think people maybe think of it so much now. They think of it as like a one kind of unified thing of Scotland, and that's what it is. But Scotland is so many things, but like England is so many different regions. And, something I'm sensitive to as a Northumbrian is that I'm not the same as the rest of England. But yeah, Scotland's similar in that it had the kind of Anglo-Saxon things in the southeast, and then it had old Cumbric things in the southwest, and the Gaelic things coming from the west and the north, Norse as well. It's so many different things throughout its history, isn't it? Different languages. I don't know if you had more comments on that, or if you could tell us about the use of the Gaelic language in the show, how often that comes in.
When I was writing Origins, when it was a movie, an article came out, a report came out about how the Gaelic language in Scotland would be dead in 10 years because we're just not using it. And I never got taught it in school when I was way back when. And if you want to learn Gaelic, you have to go to do a course, an extensive course, which obviously costs money. So it's not easily accessible to everybody. And it just horrified me that a part of our culture and a part of our history was in danger of going extinct, as are most things these days. And I thought, if I'm given this opportunity to tell this story, then I want to include Gaelic in it. Not that I speak Gaelic. I have started to learn it because it's important to me, because it's part of my heritage. But I thought, if we have this opportunity to put this story on screen, then I want to find a nice balance, don't know what that balance will be yet, of Gaelic to English or Scottish in the show, because I think it's just so important to honour that and to respect that. And I think what we wanted to do was, so when our characters are casting magic, it's all done in Gaelic. So Narsh Malai is what Gav came up with for Strength of My Hand, which is what our heroes use to summon their weapons. It's also the name of the first episode at the moment, and I really hope that sticks. So to me, it's just about keeping the language alive. And if I have an opportunity to do that, then I'll absolutely work with the Gaelic community to try and do that properly. But James will have more to say, and I'll be more intelligent than I just said.
I was brought up as a Welsh speaker in central Wales, and in Wales, I don't know what the figure is, but it feels like, certainly in the area I was in, everybody went to a Welsh speaking school and was schooled in Welsh. And when we moved to Scotland, I was 11 and I had to learn, I did speak English, but I had to learn how to write in English in order to get on at school, which was quite difficult. It always struck me how Welsh culture is so ingrained into Welsh life, certainly in Powys where I was. And comparatively, it feels like in Scotland, there hasn't been the strength of revivalism, although the people who are doing that work are extremely effective and passionate about it, but it doesn't seem to have caught on in the same way as it did in Wales until relatively recently. And there's a lot of work to do here. And I feel that the languages of Scotland, and it's not just Gaelic, we've got Scots itself in all its different varieties. The one I know the most about at the moment is Orcadian from up the very top, which is the most Norse influenced of them. I just edited a book called Deep Wheel Orcadia by Harry Josephine Giles that came out yesterday, which is written in Orcadian. If you speak normal Scots, you can't really understand this. You have to really bend your brain around it. And it's a beautiful and expressive language, but more to the point, it's a real language that the people of Orkney are actually communicating in, and it's in danger of not existing anymore. And I think it would be nice if our mainstream culture was more open to dealing with the languages that are actually spoken here, so that people don't have to give that up in order to take part in mainstream culture, and so that the mainstream culture can be more empathetic towards all of the people that live on its fringes.
Because we live in a world of mass media, and we have done for the last 70 years, I suppose. And I know there's more opportunities now where different pockets of people can group together, and we have social media. But I think it's, you know, you still get a big mainstream, and it is important, as you say, to maybe for that mainstream to be open to a wider view of what constitutes a national history or an image that they're trying to show, and recognise different minority languages within there that are part of that culture. I know in Scotland you've got BBC Alba, and that's a Gaelic language TV channel run by the BBC. I think that's maybe promising. I know filmmakers who have had works in there in the Gaelic language, but it'd be good to recognise that as a wider thing. I think the Gaelic language, as I say, maybe has a revival, but other versions of the Scots language don't get that same recognition, perhaps, to Orcadian, as you say, but even Scots speakers in other areas of the country, I don't think that's recognised, certainly not formally.
The type of Scots that are from Edinburgh and Glasgow, the sort of central belt ones, is mutually intelligible with English. Yeah. So I think people imagine it as a dialect accent, yeah, rather than an actual language unto itself.
Language in itself, yeah, because if it shares similar origins to English, but is a different language. I think there is a feeling that it's like just a worse version of English, or people look down on it, but rather than seeing it as its own thing.
People imagine that English speakers can't understand it, that it's too difficult for them to pass the accent. So we have the Scottish soap opera River City. It's filmed outside of Glasgow in Scottish accents, and they don't even speak in Scots. They speak in English with Scottish accents most of the time, with a couple of words thrown in, and it isn't broadcast in England.
It isn't broadcast anywhere outside of Scotland. It's so bizarre.
And I'm sure, you know, if nobody's watching it, then how do you justify the expense of broadcasting it? These are difficult decisions to make, I understand, but I think it's sad that if people aren't exposed to a variety of Scottish accents, then they're obviously never going to learn how to understand them. We watch American television from all over America. That I can tell the difference between someone from LA, someone from Mississippi, and someone from New York, because I'm so familiar with American television, and people don't seem to have that level of knowledge of Scotland, and it's because they're not exposed to it. They don't have the chance. And I think there are plenty of people who would love to know more about Scotland and its culture, but they're having that opportunity taken away from them by people that are afraid to invest money in something a bit different.
I think the sad reality for us as well, like if Origins does get picked up and it does become a TV show, the chances of it actually being shown in Scotland is quite slim. Like, that's just the kind of realities that we're facing with this on a more distribution level. And I think that's just totally bonkers that we can spend our time making this show. And if people in Scotland want to watch it. They'll have to have like Netflix or Amazon Prime or, you know, something like that. It will probably end up going streaming first. And I think that's just crazy to me. But I think that mostly comes down to budget. It's a fight to get anything, let alone fantasy based or mythological based, because they just fear it because of the budget. But even at an educational standpoint, you still can't seem to break that barrier. I just find that very confusing.
It's trying to get that more picked up by the mainstream. But I know there's certainly audiences out there who love languages. If you look at some of the YouTubers who talk about languages and Gaelic language and things, yeah, they've gotten the millions of views. And then folklore and mythology is getting a lot of awareness, or this kind of communities building up online around that. So I do think there's audiences there who love that flavour of exploring the deeper cultural history of Scotland and how that can tell good stories into the modern day as well. What are the plans for the show then, and the ambitions, and what's next for you?
So we've been spending a lot of time working on the writer's bible, so we know what the show is. We've been working with Judd out in Australia and his producer Liz on the kind of the pitch document, the pitch bible, or the pitch decks, to kind of make that look all shiny and nice and go, look, it's unique, it's Scottish, but it's got monsters, and we all like monsters, and it's got teen drama. Who doesn't love teen drama? So at the moment, that's out with them, and they are speaking to production companies and financiers and distributors and everyone else that can make it happen, while James, Debbie and myself have been squirreling away on the pilot script, because we're now being asked for that. We've given them enough for them to kind of chew over and consider, but now they're like, okay, now we'd like to read the script, which is great. It shows that they're interested. So at the moment we are just putting together our final notes for me, so I can work on the next draft of the script, which I like to call the final draft, whether we agree on that or not. So once I get the notes in from Debbie and James, I will go back into isolation. I will try and knock out the next draft of the script, and then if we're happy enough, because we've agreed that we'll get to the point where it's good enough for now, not that it's good enough, we'll be happy with it, but it'll be at a stage where we are happy to send it on to the people who want to look at it, because we can go back and forth with as many notes as we want, and we can go, perfect, ha ha, we've done it. As soon as a producer or a distributor or someone out there who has power to make it happen, they can be like, yeah, that's fine, but let's change the last 40 pages.
So you're getting it out to the world. How can people follow you, and how can they join in and support?
We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok under Origins of the Laoise, LAOICH, and you can follow us everywhere. We've been so lucky, genuinely, Andy, with like the support, because originally it was supposed to be a movie. And again, I just want to get across a thank you and my gratitude to everyone who's backed us, because originally it was supposed to be a movie and we were all in lockdown and we couldn't go anywhere. So I wanted to give the creatives who I work with something to do and get a bit of money. So I said, well, look, we'll create a 60-second teaser all done in visual effects. We'll get some voiceover actors in, and that way we've all got a bit of work. And then I'll get a comic book artist in who I worked with on my first movie to do concept art. And then that way we've got all this material to show people and go, look, this is what it could be. And we needed £700 to do that initial trailer and concept art. And on day one, we got £1,000 on the crowdfunding campaign. We absolutely smashed it on day one. Something that doesn't normally happen in crowdfunding campaigns. And we're like, okay, well, let's see how far we can take it then. And we said, well, if we get more money, we can do this. We can go shoot some scenes to show what it could look like. And again, by the end of it, we ended up with £18,000. So we managed to do a teaser trailer in English, a teaser trailer in Gaelic. We got to shoot 10 scenes of the sizzle reel. We had whole cast and crew out, all the equipment that we needed, costume, makeup, monster design, concept art. We've now got a prequel comic book in the works. We've got some poster art done. Like, we absolutely smashed it. And because of that, because of the people who are backing us, we've managed to give so many more creatives work that they wouldn't normally have had because of lockdown. And that's just something that I'm so grateful for. And I know the cast and crew who worked on the scissor reel, I know they're so grateful for that as well. So the crowdfunding campaigns are finished. The only crowdfunding campaign I can foresee maybe happening will be to do a board game, which is in the works, but that's a way off.
To support the show, one of the best things they can do is go on the Twitter and find the teaser trailer, which is the pinned tweet at the moment. The more views we can get on that video, the more views we can tell commissioners we have, as a way of proving that there is an audience out there for modern Scottish content.
If you type in Origins of the Laoise, we are everywhere.
Yeah, and that is spelled LAOICH.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I definitely suggest to everyone that they should follow and check it out. There's some great trailers on there. Yep. But thanks for coming on the show, gents.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. It's been great fun.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dream Swarm podcast. I've been your host, Andy Mark Simpson. We hope you'll join us for the next one. Remember, you can subscribe to stay in touch with future episodes and follow us at the website www.dreamswarm.org, or follow on Twitter and Instagram at Dream Swarm. And we look forward to joining you for more supernatural film stories and art. In the meantime, be creative, be curious, be kind.
We'll see you soon.